Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey there. Before you start listening, please make sure to subscribe to this podcast. This episode contains language and content of an explicit nature. Listener discretion is advised. Before a song is released, a record is produced, or a chorus is written, the musicians that write them think a lot. They live a lot, and they feel a lot. Before the chorus dives into the stories and experiences that shape these artists, and ultimately, the music we hear. I'm your host, Sophia Leprecaro, and this episode's guest is Chandler Layton.
I wanted to feel seen, but more than anything, I wanted others to feel seen.
Yeah.
I feel like there weren't any songs that talked about this. There weren't any people to speak about the kind of pain that they were feeling, and I think that brings me the most joy.
Hey there, welcome to this week's episode of Before the Chorus. This has been an interesting week. Still a quieter one. I think things are finally moving at a sustainable pace for me, but there's been some really, I think, monumental moments for me this week. First of all, on the kind of lighter notes, I was back at New School Jams this week on Wednesday for one of their events, and then again on Saturday because they played the LA County Fair, and I got to go and support some of the amazing people from the New School Jams community. If you're newer to this podcast, New School Jams is an amazing jam night based in Hollywood that I occasionally perform at. Every single one of the events has a different theme. We've done everything from Jeff Buckley's the next one, if you are in Hollywood on the 29th of May. Otherwise, we've done things like Soul Train and Pop Divas and a whole wide array. It's all covers, all with an incredible live band and incredible music or incredible singers coming to play. And it's a community that's very near and dear to me. It's become a big part of my larger community here in Los Angeles. And so getting to see this night that means so much to me be platformed at the LA County Fair was amazing. I was so unbelievably proud to be there to support them. And it's just really fun to watch your friends win and to watch your community win. So that was awesome. Also, this is only the second ever county fair that I've been to. Growing up in the suburbs of Montreal, we had like an almost like very baby version of a county fair type thing. But this is like literally 100 times bigger. It is so chaotic, but it's a novelty that's worth doing. You got to do like the big cheesy county fair. I didn't do any rides because I didn't feel like paying for tickets, but even just being surrounded by the lights, getting like the most ridiculous junk food you can find, walking by every convention center, petting zoo, lowrider exhibition, rides, games, concerts. It's crazy. But a fun novelty to get to be part of. And we all need some novelty in our lives. Sometimes things can be light and fun and silly. Otherwise, as you also may know if you listen to this podcast, that in addition to the music, which is kind of the main bread and butter here, mental health is often a big part of Before the Chorus. It's a big part of my personal platform. And there's a film that I watched this week. And even though what I'm about to talk about has pretty much nothing to do with music, it talks about something so near and dear to my heart, and in a way that I have never seen this thing be talked about, that I feel like it's worth kind of going on a bit of a tangent here. And the thing in question is a film called Turtles All the Way Down. It is a film based on a book by John Green. It is about a teenage girl who has obsessive compulsive disorder and is trying to navigate life, falling in love, applying for college, her friendships, her relationship with her family, all while having this condition in her brain and this rumination and intrusive thoughts that are so loud and frustrating. And as I've shared many a time here, I have obsessive compulsive disorder. I was diagnosed when I was 11 years old. And growing up, there's been pretty much zero media other than like maybe some like documentaries and like some social media platforms that ever talked about OCD. Definitely when I was younger, there was literally nothing. And then as far as characters, like in fiction, we've also had at best a quirky best friend character or at worst mommy dearest. Like, the representation that we've had has been terrible, and accurate representation pretty much non-existent outside of, again, like, documentary spaces. So to have this film exist, I struggle to find the words to explain to what degree this means something to me. Like, I have never cried so hard watching a film, and it was because I've never felt so validated and seen my story and seen the story of people like me told on screen and depicted so accurately and perfectly, but also so kindly. You know, it doesn't, you know, beat around the bush or anything, but it still shows this character as someone who is worthy of love and success and happiness. And there is something so surreal about seeing yourself portrayed in a way that you've never been portrayed before. We talk about how much representation matters, and it really fucking does. It really, really does. I wish this movie existed when I was a teenager. This condition can be very isolating at times, and it can feel hard to feel understood. So seeing it reflected back in a medium that I've never seen it reflected back before is just the most powerful thing ever. And so if you have OCD or you have a loved one that has OCD, I cannot recommend watching this film more. Truly one of the most powerful experiences that I have ever had, without understating. And so I'm so grateful for it, and I'm grateful for people that are willing to tell their stories. And to circle back to here into this podcast, I've said it before, but this is why I do this. I want to give people a platform to share their stories so that they can feel validated, these people being the artists themselves. But I want people to hear this podcast, and if they relate to a story that's in a song, that they get to feel that deeper sense of validation and connection. All of us getting to feel seen is so important for the way that we're able to confidently move through the world, to for the rest to be able to process things, to be able to heal from things. And so, yeah, again, I'm just grateful for people that are willing to share their stories. And I think this is also a perfect time to start talking about this week's guest, Chandler Layton. Chandler is actually one of my friends from New School Jams. In fact, she was playing at the LA County Fair this weekend. And in her music, she is so open about her own struggles with mental health, with the coping mechanisms that come from that, the healing journey she's had to go on. She speaks very openly on this record about being a child of divorce and the way that that can affect someone growing up, and again, the coping mechanisms that that comes up with. And she talks about how validating it is for herself to be able to tell these stories, and how much she hopes that it'll validate for other people. So it couldn't fall better within in line with the ethos of this podcast and the stories that I like to see told. So I think that's all I want to say. I really want to let Chandler's words speak for themselves. So without further ado, this is my interview with Chandler Layton.
As a neurospicy person myself, I love a good record about neurodivergent stuff because, you know, feels right at home. So I'm super excited to talk about it.
Yay. I know I haven't actually I feel like I've done interviews for articles and PR and stuff, but I haven't actually talked about it out loud at all, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like I let half that album kind of speak for itself and didn't do a lot of promotion as I did for the first half because it's split between two discs.
Yeah.
Disc one is obviously very heavy. Those were the songs that went quote unquote viral, and the other ones were uncomfortable to push online. It just didn't feel right.
Yeah, that's understandable. But I like the idea of still being able to talk about it as a whole body of work,
yeah.
You know? And I think probably starting close to the top of the record, so disc one is a good place to start because so much of it is about mental health. I mean, the first two songs, literally, that's, we're diving straight into it, you know, Sick and Monster. And I mean, I guess one thing I kind of clocked from that, and this is usually kind of, maybe it's me projecting shit because I'm very much same kind of person, but I get the sense that you are a very deeply feeling person.
Yes. Yeah. I am the most avoidant feeling person in the world. My mom, obviously, which I talk about in the album with letter and late apology, my parents got divorced when I was 7. It was a lot of back and forth, the court battle. I lived with my dad for a little, then my mom. So I grew up very independent. So I think with that, it's interesting to finally admit to myself, I actually am a lot more sensitive than I tell myself. Because I feel like my entire childhood, I had to be really, really strong all the time. So I try to I push a lot of emotions down to just write it on paper instead, because I feel like it's a lot easier for me to do that.
Yeah. I think it's also, speaking as someone who's very hypersensitive too, in my own journeys with mental health and learning my own coping mechanisms, I realized that whenever something got too deep, especially a deeper form of sadness, it almost felt like the feeling would suddenly disappear. It's just
it's a response.
Exactly.
It's I don't want to feel it, because if I do, you have to keep digging under it. And it's once you uncover something, there's something else underneath it.
Yeah.
And then there's something else underneath that. The journey to healing is not one that ever ends, which I learned.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I started reaching these topics that I have been my entire life without talking about, there was a lot of grief and a lot of anger underneath it, which explains the record, why it's split in half. And I've always had half dyed hair. It was always half black, half white. It's still that way on the bottom. It was always a symbol to me. It was a hairstyle, but it was also a symbol to me of the two versions of myself, which is that dark, you know, the angry part of the album, and then the second half, which is very sad and melancholy and very, very sensitive. And I'm a very outgoing person. I'm very, very happy. And that's what people always knew me as. But till I uncovered all this stuff, I realized that I was I knew I was always obviously an emotional person, but I think I just buried a lot of it all the time.
Yeah.
People-pleasing mentality.
I was going to ask, are you also a recovering people-pleaser? And then you're like,
still recovering.
Oh, I'm still recovering every day.
I don't
day.
Think I'll ever stop recovering from that.
Same. Literally same. I
also just think that comes from being empathetic.
Yeah,
I think it's
massively.
A gift, you know, to care so much. Obviously, caring too much is not great for your mental health, but I think it just means that we care about how we make other people feel, you know.
Yes. I think
it's important.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much in that that I want to come back around to. But first, the thing that you said about the sort of imagery of halves. I like how in the music video for Letter to Everyone Who's Hurt Me, there's the two dancers, one wearing black and one wearing white. And there's so much of it where they're fighting with each other until the end, where they actually kind of learn how to reconcile with each other and find joy in the duality. And I thought that was a really powerful image.
Yeah, my co-director on that, we creatively directed it together and she directed it. She was amazing. She met me when I was singing and she's like, I want to work with you. And I was like, I actually have a great concept for you, which she deeply felt. And because of the half black, half white hair, we also used that symbol in the music video, which was growth and pain. It was the two things. And we wanted to symbolize that with the dancers represented my adult self and my childhood self, the unhealed version and the version of myself that was uncovering all of this trauma. And it's like growth and pain feel the same. You see the dancers, they choreograph that so beautifully, but it's like you see the tug and the pull. It's like the wanting to hold the child, your inner child, and then there's the I don't want to tap into this because it's really difficult, you know? So it's like that was probably my favorite music video and also the most emotional thing to watch.
I'm sure.
Like watching those dancers. And I had the girl who played my younger self was someone that I had babysat since she was little yay high.
Oh my God.
Like I used to work, I was a cheerleading coach at LMU and that's how I met her because I was coaching her. It was like a summer camp that I just like taught them whatever. And like, that's when I started babysitting them. And she also has a divorced parents and had a huge connection to the song. So I think it was just very emotional for everyone involved, which made it extra special.
Yeah. I think those are.
She turned into a little actress that day. It was incredible to see how she can be so young and just channel that energy.
Yeah.
Like it was. And we, oh my God, part of that music video. We worked with a red camera, and with red cameras, you have to have specific SD cards. And the first day that we filmed the entire day, my director calls me and she goes, she's bawling her eyes out. She goes, Chandler, we lost all the footage.
Oh no.
So we had to reshoot everything again. And these people were pro bono. We made that entire music video in a $5,000 budget. And
oh,
that just
God.
Covered the rentals, and everybody was there to just make it. Like I got so lucky, like Optimus Studios gave me that entire space for free.
Wow.
Because I sang at their Christmas party.
Aww.
But it's like, yeah, I got really lucky and know a lot of great people who were willing to donate me their time to make art. And I think that is so special.
Yeah.
It was an incredible, incredible experience that I'm very fortunate to have had.
That's awesome. Yeah, it is such a gorgeous video. I mean, I told you the other night like that this was also just my favorite song on the record because I love songs, especially anything that falls under the kind of like wide pop umbrella that's able to speak on nuance. I think that whenever pop music is able to do that, because it's such a tricky format to do that in, but I think it's what makes the best pop music. So it's something I always appreciate a lot when I find it.
It was hard for me too, because I had been going such this dark route that often artists, we feel pigeonholed in our genre because people expect us to keep going with the sound that made us popular in the first place. And I didn't want to do that because if a song stands good on its own with the production that it has, like you shouldn't change it to fit into a genre that other people expect you to have or you expect yourself to have. I think letting that go was a huge part of splitting the album in half. I was like, I want to show artists that like it's okay to be versatile, like you can have two different parts of you and you don't have to be pigeonholed into a genre, you know. And like even if those tracks, like I mean Letter did really really great, but the other tracks like didn't, but like I never was upset by that because I think they were for me.
Yeah,
you know. And I think that's what that whole album was really. It's like, this is my story, this is who I am. If you want to get to know me, listen to this.
Yeah. I love that you just said that because there's a line that I had noted in on a late apology, which is I had to ask myself if I'm living for me or you. And I feel like this is a very good time to bring that line up.
Yeah. That referenced my parents' custody battle, which was like when I wanted to go live with my dad. I wanted to be in LA. It's when I started musical theater. I knew from a very young age what I wanted to do. And it was hard to make those choices when you're so young. I was in fifth grade. You know, I was in court when I was 11. it's like part of it is so blacked out from like trauma and whatever. And I made a lot of mistakes as a kid, but I'm also like, I was a kid, you know, and I put my parents through a lot and my parents went through a lot. And, you know, when I put that song out, Late Apology, it was super difficult for my mom to hear that and relive it. You know, it's like we as children, I feel like in this generation are doing a lot more healing than our parents did, you know. Mental health is a lot more talked about than it was back then. So yeah, that was about like making choices for me. Even if that hurts other people, which is the worst part, you know, it's like at the end of the day, it's like you're the one who has to live with yourself. You're the one who has to wake up in this body every single day and make those choices, you know. And sometimes making those hard choices are going to upset people, but you have to be okay with living with that as long as it's in good means.
Exactly.
Not hurting people in the wrong way, but in the way of self-growth and realization.
Yeah. I think it's that it's not so much that you're actively hurting a person. It's more like they're, I don't know, it could be that they just have to live with their own stuff that makes them dislike that decision, or it brings up old trauma or whatever it is. But you're so right. And I think that for those of us that are, again, recovering people pleasers, that's such a difficult part of our journeys, but it's so necessary because, I don't know, like you just keep yourself trapped in so many ways when you don't allow that for yourself.
Yeah, it takes a lot to sacrifice things, especially in this career.
Yes.
A lot of time, a lot of not seeing friends and not keeping up with family and not calling them enough. And I've had to have many conversations with my family. I'm like, I'm here, like, I love you and I care, but I'm like, I, like, my career is my entire life. Like, this is, you know, even if it's hard, this is how I work through things. And I think that's the most uncomfortable part about being a musician.
Yeah.
Truly. Like, even with I Think You Turned Me, you know, like, I wrote that 2 years ago and that was extremely difficult for me to release. Like, that was also in the time where, like, right now, obviously, like gay pop and culture, it's like, you know, we have the Chapels and the Fletchers, mm-hmm. and it's like, it's like everyone is so pro and ally, and it's amazing. But mm-hmm. at the time when I had released that, like, I was fucking terrified, and you know, I ruined a lot of relationships there with his family, and that hurt. But it's also like, this is what I do. Like, I have to write about my stuff because it's also my story.
Yeah,
as long, I mean, it's theirs too. And there are boundaries with the song, like Letter and Late Apology. I always ask my parents, like, what is your no-no?
Yeah.
Because I also learned that I have to respect their privacy while also telling my story.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I called my dad and I was like, I know there are things that you would never want me to talk about, but there are, like, you know, the aspect of divorce is a very 50% of people get fucking divorced, you know. But like, there were things that he's like, I don't want you to talk about this. And I was like, I respect that.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I have to respect your privacy, but I also want to heal at the same time. And it ended up that we all collectively healed together as a family through these songs, which was amazing. Like that song, when I first posted it, Letter, and I filmed my entire family reacting to it, that was real. It was a very real reaction. It was because Brennan and I, we were talking about divorced families and how we don't blame our parents. Like, we were talking about the Thanksgiving dinner table and we're like, oh, we don't blame you for the things that we went through because it made us who we were. And Brennan and I took him to my Thanksgiving dinner and we started laughing because we looked around, we're like, we wrote a song about this and now would actually be a really good time to show you. That was the first time I had my mom and my dad for Thanksgiving dinner in 20 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So like having them there together to like experience this was extremely difficult, but very healing for all of us. It had sparked a lot of conversations with everyone. And I think everyone empathized with each other about what we've been through, but not where we're going. It was kind of like, this is where we were, but we can head somewhere a little better.
That's awesome. that's huge. And I like that you said that because there is that sense of, again, I know we're coming back to this song so much, but it just holds a lot. And, you know, like like these images of, you know, do I thank you for making me who I was, or do I like
blame you? It's both.
Yeah, it's all of the above. But I love that you're so much like, again, it's learning how, like, I know in my own life I've really learned how to let anger and empathy coexist and not let
two feelings can exist at the same time.
Literally, the amount
I
of times
that my, last year.
Yeah, my therapist tells me that all the time, and it was like a game changer for my mental health. And it's, yeah, I'm trying to think where I want to like start with all this, because especially again coming back to like people pleaser stuff, I know in my case that when we're angry with people, we're more likely to bottle it up because we want to protect them from our anger, or we're so focused on
that's the people pleaser.
Yes, or we want to empathize with where they came from, which is not, like you said, it's not a bad quality. I think there's a lot of beauty and power in being an empathetic person, but when we don't acknowledge our own anger, it festers like a disease,
and then you project it onto others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're humans, we make a lot of mistakes, we say the wrong thing all the time, you know. But it's like I've learned through all this is accountability and ego are my words of the year. Always checking my ego, because the ego does not want to leave, you know. It's very safe inside you. So that's kind of been my thing this year, is just to kind of give myself grace as I process this, especially being someone who's a public figure and sharing my entire life online, you know, has been a lot. I feel like lately now I'm being more careful of what I say and how I say it, because I feel like it's like, yeah, once people start watching, it's scary, you know? But the feeling of having people know you without knowing you is odd.
It's weird. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I really wanted to talk about Extra Extra, which is so like in that space.
That's so funny you say that. I forgot about that song. It's like, wow, that song really fucking wrote itself. Like, I should need to learn to shut my mouth. I've been going through a lot of that this year. Oversharing.
Oh my God. I think it's, I know like with what, like my condition, OCD, apparently like over confessing is a symptom. I don't know if that's the case for like your stuff, but yeah. And then also it's funny, I interviewed Sam from X Ambassadors a few weeks ago, and he was talking about how much like he like found this sort of like joy in people tearing his heart out and like people seeing his pain. Like it was like this weird way of feeling seen that he still has like a complicated relationship with.
And that also comes from childhood too.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of like, that's why I did theater. I was like, someone hear me, look at me, pay attention to me. You know, it's like especially with divorced parents.
Yeah.
You're like,
validate me. Exactly. Validate the shit
look
that
at
I'm
me,
going through.
You know, and I feel like putting out this music was that. You know, it's like I wanted people. I wanted to feel seen, but more than anything, I wanted others to feel seen.
Yeah.
I feel like there weren't any songs that talked about this. There weren't any people to speak about the kind of pain that they were feeling. And I think that brings me the most joy.
Yeah.
Is at the end of the day, yes, I make these records for me, but a lot of the time it's for them.
Yeah.
Like I am always keeping the people in, you know, my mind when I write these songs. Like my fans are always in my mind when I'm putting this stuff out, just because I feel like now with these like projects that I've been doing, I've been so honest that I'm like, at first it was fucking terrifying and I hated it. Like, yeah, being exposed. And like, once you put something out there, everyone can critique you.
Yeah.
And then you have to live with that.
The kind of other side of the coin, like that's what I feel like Extra Extra talks about so much, and even reminded me, even though this is something that still exists nowadays, it was kind of like in an even worse version, I think, in the 2000s, like when we'd watch people like Britney Spears or Demi Lovato or Lindsay Lohan go through like some kind of breakdown, and it became this like horrible form of entertainment for people, where it was like,
it's sick.
Yeah. But very it was sick. Like we fetishize it almost, like
people forget that artists are people.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's behind their phones. A lot of people have a lot of mean things to say in the comments, and people forget that there are human beings on the other side of that.
Yeah.
Who have feelings, who go through their own shit. And it's like, learning to just be kind,
yeah,
and be empathetic towards people. You know, it's like, it's almost like a forgotten thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes me sad. I think that's why I want to make this music, is because I want to be that person.
Yeah.
You know,
I think a lot of people conflate accountability with like either whether it be a performative thing or like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, not necessarily like cancel culture, although if we wanted to go on a whole thing about that, we could, but it's a long conversation. It's kind of more like you can hold someone accountable or like have a conversation of like, hey, maybe this view needs to be, you know, unpacked a little bit. And maybe this isn't the best way to approach this thing without like automatically tearing someone down. Obviously, there are situations where accountability has to be more heavy handed, you know, like the kind of, you know, like Harvey Weinstein's and like people who do like actively malicious and predatory things. But yeah, I think I totally agree with you that there needs to be more of an open dialogue. And I think accountability needs to look different in different situations.
Yeah. I mean, I spoke about something that I was not educated on this week, and it took people responding aggressively for me to look at myself and really educate myself and do the learning. And I think that's the most important thing too, because it's like, yeah, even if we make those mistakes, if we're being held accountable to our word and sharing outwardly, like I, you know, posted like this thing on my Twitter and I was like, I made a mistake, you know, and I spoke on something that I should have dissected more before speaking out loud, because our digital footprint is forever.
Yeah.
And so I think it's very important to constantly challenge yourself and let others challenge you, even if it's not nice. I enjoy it because I am on the healing journey and the personal growth. So it's like, yeah, I love all that. Truly.
That's a good thing. Yeah. It shows a lot of,
it's hard.
Yes, it is. But it shows a willingness to be accountable. And that's also like a good sign of like where you can be on your own healing journey when you're willing to lean in and listen when those things happen, instead of, you know, responding with that like trauma response of, you know, screw you, I don't want to hear it, you know?
Yeah. Because also like people forget that we have backgrounds of things that we learn. You know, it's like people who are really, really Christian and then they decide that it was toxic for them and they decide to leave. And it's like to do all of that and to unlearn everything that you learned growing up is also really hard. And I feel like people don't give enough grace for that, which is why like we make so many mistakes as human beings, is because all of the trauma stores in our body and it comes out all the time.
Yeah.
And we always have to, it's like the ego again. It's like we have to like keep checking ourselves and wonder, where is this coming from? Why am I reacting the way that I am? Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is just stored stuff from things that we've learned, things that we've been through, all that trauma. That's inside.
I feel that. And this is why everyone should go to therapy, which is why this episode is no, it's not.
Sponsored by BetterHelp. And I like that too. I talk a lot about this too. Talk therapy is great.
Yeah.
However, I don't know if this is controversial, I always talk about breath work with people.
Yeah.
Which is why I think I'm so tapped in energetically to myself, is because talk therapy is up here, right?
Yeah.
It's very how do you explain it? Like your brain is very calculated.
Yeah.
You know, and your brain talks before anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the trauma that is stored in your body will get released through breath work and ice baths. And it's like, you know, I'm a very spiritual person. Like I do a lot of that. I did, you know, medicinal mushroom therapy. You know, I went to breath work for 2 years with my amazing coach, Gazzo, and we did freezing ice baths, because it's like, they always say like the cold does not lie. And I used to have panic attacks and anxiety until I started doing breath work and ice baths, because like talk therapy wasn't enough for me to bring out the things that were stored in here, you know, because like our bodies store memory. It's like, yes, our brains analyze things. Our brains are very analytical. But when you do breath work, it's like when you hear a loud noise and it's like maybe there was something that happened to you back then, your body remembers that, and that's why you react. So it's like, if you don't start noticing the way your body feels in certain situations, people who have social anxiety, it's like, why do you have social anxiety? Where do you feel it?
Massively. My therapist makes me do that stuff all the time. Like, I don't do talk therapy. I do cognitive behavioral therapy because, yeah, again, with OCD, that's the like kind of that. And like,
it's a physical reaction more, yes, than it is a mental one.
And for OCD, we also, talk therapy can actually end up making you ruminate and look for reassurance even more. So also another caveat, everybody deserves to go to therapy. Everyone also deserves to have a therapist that matches whatever they're going through, yes, because it's really specific. And
the ego death.
Yes.
It's a very important one.
All of that. And yeah, like you said, everything does get stored in the body for sure. Like I've started to like occasionally go for massages just to like kind of get stuff out of my muscles. And I definitely store a lot in my shoulders, for example, like so much
stress,
massively. I am an anxious fucking person.
I was like, that's why these shoulders are yoked, yo. I'm like, this is all my fucking stress that I'm carrying.
Oh my God. My massage therapist, the last time I went, told me that my muscles felt like bone.
Wow.
It's like, I think that's bad.
You're like, yeah, can we fix that?
Yeah. It's like, can you do your thing where you get rid of that? But yeah, but I think like bringing all this back to like the album, I mean, so much of this album feels like such a like excavation of coping mechanisms. And, you know, like you said, it's telling your own story and kind of recognizing your own patterns and I guess documenting different parts of a healing journey.
Yeah. And I wrote this album while doing the breath work.
Nice.
So it's like all these things were uncovered by doing that. You know, the people-pleasing things, the childhood trauma that's in my body, the things that we use to cope, you know, mm-hmm, that maybe drinking, going out, you know, not sleeping, self-medicating, you know, like sick was
people.
All about that. Yeah, it's like fixer-upper was, yeah, like my, you know, whole life I thought I could fix people.
Yeah.
And that stemmed from my childhood. And
yeah,
I think because of a healer mentality, all I want to do is help people, yeah, which is why I make this music that I do. But I, yeah, realize I'm like, the biggest lesson is people cannot be helped unless they want to be.
Yeah.
Like if they don't want it, like you can't force people to go to therapy. You can't force people to do the work if they don't want to.
No.
It has to be a calling. It has to be when you're ready. And I had to unlearn that. That I cannot force people to heal.
Yeah.
And like Fixer Upper exactly was just like the people that I dated were awful for me because I thought I can make them better. Yeah. I can make them want to grow. I can make them want to do the work. You can't.
No.
You can provide the space to, how do I say this the right way? It's like you can hold their hand and like give, yeah, them all the tools. You can teach them all the ways, but at the end of the day,
yeah,
it's what, you know, like you can't force them to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Give them the tools to do it, but wait until they're ready.
Exactly. I always say it's like the most you can do is like point something out to someone in a loving way of like, hey, this is this like thing you're doing and it's affecting me. You now have this information. I'm going to go over here. And if and when you decide to, you know,
yeah,
heal yourself, then you can come back and we will, you know, like, I mean, it also depends, you know,
that's how you keep your peace with
you
yourself
have to.
You know, like your mental health and peace is so sacred and special. Yeah. You know, and it's like there was a Hawaiian hypnosis that I did with Gazo Hippopono, whatever.
Okay.
And he's like, close your eyes and think of the person who wronged you the most and imagine them on a little stage and take all the love and the healing that you have and take it out of your head and place it on theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Now you did what you needed to do. You gave them that. And that's what I think about like tools and like telling, yeah, people. It's like kind of like that. It's like I'm giving you everything that I can. And once you do that, you have to let go.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you did your part. And like that's when it's like you have to make peace with that.
Massively.
It's like, well, I did that. And now I have to, you know, go back to working on myself.
Yeah. And speaking on working on yourself, another big thing that I clocked a lot across this record was the idea that you can't run from your own problems and like,
woo-hoo,
no matter, yeah,
no, you can't.
And also like it's both the things that you're running away from and also the things that we often run towards are not always as magical as we think they're going to be, and learning how to reconcile that both looking back and looking forward can be a very weird part yeah. of being a human. Like, Got What I Wanted has like a huge element of that, especially being like, oh, this is this career that I love, but it's also like,
it's like the grass might be greener on the other side, but that's maybe because it's fake.
Yeah,
you know. And it's like, it's not, you know, like Got What I Wanted too is like this idea that once I had this thing and I had the monthly listeners that I did, it was going to feel like I was on top of the world. But what it actually was everyone knows my life story. Now I feel raw and ripped down to my bones. And like literally that day, like the same day I hit a million monthly listeners, I was with someone and I was craving more. And this was like my ego, right? I was like, oh, well, I'm not where I want to be. And they looked at me, they're like, well, I only have 50,000. It was like an immediate, like, not holding me in what I wanted, but also not reading the space either.
Yeah.
And it was like an interesting thing to think about. And I was like, we're always craving more.
Yeah.
As humans, it's like we literally cannot help it. We always want to strive for greatness. It's just in our purpose, you know. And that day, my mom, like, I was literally driving and she's like, you overdrafted your bank account. Like zero in my checking, zero in my savings. And I almost crashed my car on the freeway, which is like broke down on the freeway. It was not my car breaking down. It was me breaking down inside my car. And I was like, and I called my dad and I was like just bawling. So I was like, I don't understand. I'm like, I'm working. And I was also just burnt, like so burnt out. I was fucking exhausted. And I was like, I'm doing everything that I can. And I thought it was supposed to feel different. But I realized that was the other part of the healing. I had to check my values. I'm like, well, what do I value the most?
Yeah.
And it's connection. It's healing. Doing what I love. My friends. You know, and I had to reevaluate everything that I loved. That way it's like, oh, your video doesn't go viral. You're not going to spiral. Yeah. And be upset, because it's like at the end of the day, you make music for you. And if there are just five people whose life changes because of that, that's enough for me.
Yeah.
And that took me a long time to accept, because it was like what we were talking about earlier, validation.
Yeah.
It was like this need to be validated online. And then I was like, well, the only person I need to validate is myself.
Yeah.
Because I'm the one who has to wake up in this body every day. Yeah. And luckily now, like, I am making money full time. I'm doing what I love. And do I have a savings? No, but I am paying my rent. So
there you go.
And that to me is good enough. You know, I couldn't say that I was doing that 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to also hold myself in that way. It's like I'm doing everything that I said I was going to do when I was a kid. And I think that's kind of like at the end of the video, I'm smiling.
Yeah.
Because it's like, but I'm still doing the thing that I always wanted to do. Does it look like everything that I thought it would be? No, but it's enough to make me happy.
Proof You Weren't the Only One is available now wherever you normally get your music. This podcast is hosted, edited, and produced by myself, Sophia Lopercaro, and the artwork is by Meg Wilford.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, are you a super fan of Taylor Swift, Jelly Roll, or Morgan Wallen? Are you that song nerd who likes to dive into every little lyric of every little song and figure out what everything means? Do you want to take that a bit further, though? Because I have a podcast called Songwriter Soup, and it dives into the journey of a songwriter and how those people help craft the soundtrack of your life. I'm Laura Veltz. And I'm bringing all of my friends together to discuss our funny little job, writing for all of your favorite artists. Listen to Songwriter Soup wherever you get your podcasts.